Do Christians have a future in LGBTQ America? So asked Star Parker, internationally syndicated column. Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Star joins us on the program. By the way, Star Parker is also an author of some books. You can see her works at starparker.com, and her ministry directly is urbancure.org. Star, thanks so much for joining us.
You're so welcome, Jerry. It's good to be with you.
Sure. And by the way, for those not familiar with you, just real fast, the short version of your testimony, it's really amazing what God has done in your life. And now you even have a national platform through your syndicated column and your books. But how about just the Reader's Digest version of your own conversion? Then we'll get right into this issue of LGBTQ America.
Well, thank you, because I love sharing my testimony, because I believe that if God can bring me to this place, then he can bring anyone to this place. I had believed all the lies of the left, that my problems were somebody else's fault, that I was poor because others were wealthy, that America was racist, so I didn't need the mainstream. And in buying all of that lie, I just started getting very lost within myself and my decisions. And so very early, I was in criminal activity and drug activity and sexual activity, in and out of abortion clinic after clinic. And finally, on a gut instinct that I shouldn't kill my offspring, I was pregnant again, not married, and I went on welfare, and that's where the Lord found me. I was living on welfare, just doing nothing. And so, well, I was doing some stuff, but it was all illegal, so I'm not going to mention it right now because I don't want to go to jail after what he did for me. He found me in that little dark hole and just got me up out of there. I ended up back in college. I got a degree. I started a business. And after the 92 Los Angeles riots destroyed my business, I started moving towards social reform and really thinking to fix the problems that now I was so aware of and that I had got trapped up in, and so had many others in our society. And so I began to work in social policy reform. I consulted on federal welfare reform in the 90s, which led me then to found Urban Cure, the Center for Urban Renewal and Education. We're a policy institute in Washington, D.C., that looks for market-based solutions to fight poverty. And the reason I did that is because after welfare reform in the 90s, we said what we shouldn't be doing, but little thought was what we should be doing. And, you know, after 50 years of the social engineering of the left, we really have a challenge with our anti-poverty programs. About $900 billion is spent annually from our federal budget. It's a quarter of the budget on these anti-poverty programs, and no one knows any that are working. And frankly, at the end of the day, the Lord said, render to Caesar what Caesar's and God what's God's. And charity belongs to the Lord. It belongs to the church and God's people and communities. And so our mission is to get the government out of welfare and let the people that are supposed to be helping those that are the least of these get into their rightful position. So that's my Reader's Digest 30-second elevator speech of my testimony that's still building every single day. And as I said, I share it willingly because I want others to know that if God can help me, he can help them. And there's so many that are so lost right now in our society that need that message.
Wow. Amen. All right. Now, last year, you note this in your column, you equated the LGBTQ rainbow flag to the Confederate flag. Here's what you said, quote, "From my point of view, it's a totally reasonable assertion. As a black American, the Confederate flag communicates to me that I am not welcome. As a Christian American, the rainbow flag communicates to me that I am not welcome." I understand there was quite a firestorm at your office because of your just making that remark. What happened?
Well, not only at my office, and what that was during the discussions where people were, the left was going around pulling down Confederate flags and Confederate statues. I was asked on Fox News about this, and I said, you know, it's really remarkable how the same people that are demanding that the Confederate flag comes down are the same people hoisting the rainbow flag. When flags have meaning, they're symbols and they have meaning, and frankly, in this case, they mean the same thing. The Confederate flag says no blacks, the rainbow flag says no Christians. And yes, that firestorm not only hit my office to where I had two of my staffers quit because the pressure was just so large, but also my personal life. I ended up having to go to a security expert because the threat level had reached that height, and they highly recommended that I moved out of my personal home because I'm single and live in a community at that time that is not gated. My personal home is just, you know, private neighborhood. So my end result is I'm kind of like in a witness protection program right now in a home that's not mine, even while I work in Washington, D.C. What's interesting is that in Washington, D.C., it's safer. And so I didn't have to change any of my real patterns there in terms of move my office and or my apartment. But in my personal life, it has really, really changed. I can appreciate all of what's happening now, more deeply with some of the people in the presidential cabinet, because it happened to me last year, to where you get to the place that you can't even go into a restaurant.
Wow. All right. Well, this interview is being recorded around 3 years after the anniversary of the Obergefell decision, which is the same-sex marriage decision. Certainly, homosexuals have gained a lot of rights in America, but even to the point where it's at the expense of many other Americans. And ironically, the LGBT community represents less than about 3% of the total population, but boy, they certainly have power. And we should state at the very outset that this is all done with great respect and love, but also disagreement with those in that lifestyle. Any comment on that front before we get into some of the meat of your article?
Yeah, I'd like to clarify that, first of all, the homosexuals in our society already had rights. They have all of the protections of the Constitution as all Americans. Mm-hmm. What has happened over this last 3 years, and even leading up to that particular Supreme Court decision, is the homosexual lobby organized themselves and hired a lobbyist. Unlike any other sin in the history of sin, they hired a lobbyist to force their opinions and ideas on the rest of society. So what has happened as a result is it put the Christian church in a defensive place, because the homosexual lobby, decided that they were going to declare war on pastors and parents, because everybody else in society really didn't care what you were doing in your private space. Of course, there's always been a Christian message that homosexual activity, like all illicit sexual activity, is sin, and it's something that we should appreciate as sin and try to work towards staying away from it and all sin, and work to be that better and finer person that God has created us to be. So that's the challenge, is that they went and hired lobbyists and they started working through the law to change the public square. So as a result, the public square now is very, very tense. It is two worldviews conflicting, and it's kind of interesting to see how this is going to play out, because you can't have it both ways. I've said many a times, we're moving to the place like we were in the 1850s, when Abraham Lincoln had to look into the scriptures and see that Jesus said a house divided against itself cannot stand. You can't do both. And he said at that time, we can't be both slave, half slave and half free. Well, here we are now in 2018 at that same place to say we can't be both. We can't be biblical and free and secular and status at the same time in the public square. So this is a challenge for just not only the church, but also for the homosexual lobby, because even libertarians who normally agree with their worldview are starting to see that this is complicated. This is not a cut and dry that they said that they just wanted to love each other and be able to hold hands in public. No, this is an enforce using the heavy hand of government to force people out of the public square who disagree with them. So it's starting to cost anyone that is biblical in their worldview, in their profession, in their social life, in their legal life. And some people are saying this is how you end up to where it will not be, we're not too far from people deciding that you shouldn't even live, because you're no longer an acceptable human being. This is a ground that we have not treaded into before, and it needs good thought, and that's why I wrote the column.
Well, you even give a recent example where the CEO of Twitter, you said he's worth an estimated net worth of $5 billion. He may had the misfortune of tweeting, I guess, or sending out the message that he enjoyed eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich. Oh, horrors of horrors. The left came down on him really hard, like he had committed the unpardonable sin. Tell us about that.
He did commit the unpardonable sin in their mind. In fact, he had to make a public statement to denounce eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich, because the owner of Chick-fil-A is a Christian. It's incredible. This is a liberal one, and this is also a big businessman who still could not withstand the pressure of the homosexual lobby in his personal life, because he was trying to just enjoy a sandwich and happen to post it. But it's not only him. This list is getting so long of people that are at stake in their careers based on their disagreement with the homosexual left. Look what happened to the fire chief, Kelvin Cochran. He lost his job as a fire chief in a major city in our country, Atlanta, simply because he wrote a Christian book for his church about how men should live their lives, and he addressed homosexuality. This is very necessary, in particular, as it's an African-American, addressing an African-American church, because he knew that our marriages were collapsing. He needed to speak into what was happening in this particular segment of our society as a result of sexual promiscuity. And yet it was the homosexual lobby that came down on him, and he lost his dream job. He's not the only one. I'm telling you, this list is getting so long. So it's important that the Christian church knows, number one, they are in a culture war, and number two, start devising ideas on how we're going to fight it, because it will get very, very complicated if they do not start pressuring and push back. And because we have a movement here in California that will, if it plays out the way they want it, the Bible will be banned. We will not be able to even speak the Bible or have the Bible in the public square. This is a very serious point in American history that too many don't know we are at.
You know, this thing about California, this is a situation where essentially they're trying to impose a conversion ban, so-called. That would mean that if a person finds him or herself in a homosexual, you know, situation, and they find Jesus Christ, and this has happened, and it happens many times, in fact, and they find freedom in the gospel, and they want to share that with others, they're not allowed to do that if that law passes and becomes the law of the land in California, because you can't, you know, once gay, you're condemned to that all your life. Whoa.
Right, and yet we all know that choice is involved in all of our sexual participation. So for them to, even if they try to claim there's a gene that they can't help themselves, well, some people do have dispositions to certain sin. I mean, not everybody has to deal with the sin of gossip. Not everyone has to deal with the sin of alcoholism. So there are distributions that we may say, oh, gosh, Lord, why do I have to fight this spirit all of my life? But that said, you're absolutely right. If an individual then says, Pastor, I need help. I don't want to live this lifestyle. I really want to have appreciation of grandchildren for my mom and my dad. I need help. That would be illegal for the pastor then to try to help him, to guide him or her through salvation, which is, you know, working out even in our everyday decisions. You know, I was just recently on the same platform with a young woman who had bought the lie that she was a boy and she was a man and she should be a man. And she had gotten all the way to the place where she had her breasts removed, and she knew that there was something really wrong with this. And over time, she kept listening to Dr. Everett Piper, believe it or not, on radio, that she was able to come to her senses through hearing how wrong this behavior is, and that God had salvation for her, that she reformed herself, got back into her church, and she stopped taking those pills that make her become a boy, but she'll never get her breast back. This is serious what we're up against with this now new spirit of trans. And what's really interesting is they keep pushing out this idea, LGBTQ. Okay, we did the L and the G. They legalized marriage for themselves. We're doing the T now, the trans, and this is a big, big challenge in our society right now. They did the Q, where they're changing all of the textbooks, even as low as kindergarten, to reflect that you don't know what you are. You're questioning. But notice they skipped over the B. And there are some that say that this B is going to bombard us with real vileness in our society if they get what they want, because it's not about bisexuality, it's about bestiality. And so therefore, we need to be aware of these things, and we need to start fighting them now. And we battle in the voting booth. As a society, we do not want to take up arms like the left is trying to provoke us to do right now. We want to battle in the voting booth so that we can get the law, the public square, back in order with the scriptures.
Mm. You're not saying, though, that officially the B in LGBTQ stands for bestiality. It still stands for bisexuality, but you're saying that some are using it in that way. We're almost out of time, by the way.
No, we don't know, because remember, they said that the Q meant queer, that they were just mocking themselves.
Oh, I see. Now it means
question.
And we
found out that, no, that it didn't. When we moved to that point to legalize now trans, they moved to the point to where every textbook has to be rewritten, because it didn't really mean Q queer, it makes you questioning. And that's why now if you send your kid to these government schools, they're going to learn in kindergarten that it's okay to question your sexuality. So we're not sure what they mean by B. What we do know through the studies of Ryan Anderson from the fellow at the Heritage Foundation, yes, is that they are already in Washington trying to rewrite laws to where marriage laws are no longer about wedlock, they're about wed lease. Instead of having monogamy, they want monogamish, and the other one is instead of couples, they want thruples. So we do know that there is an agenda, and we do know that there has been discussion about bestiality in their closed doors. So I'm just saying that don't be surprised if we find out that that B is not what they've said publicly, that we just love each other, that it may in law show up as something else.
Wow. Star Parker, thank you so much for joining us. StarParker.com for more information. All the best to you, Star. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.